because I watched that over and over and over on the night it aired without subtitles, and I was like, tossing a pair of balls?
Oh my god.
What is he talking about? But tell me that tossing up air balls doesn't sound like tossing a pair of balls.
It kind of does.
Right? He's like, he's gonna be tossing up air balls all night. And I was like, a pair of balls?
A pair of balls? In this economy?
Tossing them? Okay.
Oh my goodness.
Hello and welcome to our Riverdale podcast, brought to you by the Aficionados Podcast Network. My name is Robin Jeffrey. I'm a 28-year-old actor and artist. I like brooding anti-heroes, feminist agendas, and I remember way too many details that no one else cares about. You can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey pretty much everywhere, and our fun fact for this episode is, what's your favorite thing to do at a sleepover? Honestly, what they do in this episode is pretty good, minus the alcohol. I just want to gossip. Maybe sing some songs.
You just want to kiss girls at sleepovers?
They did not kiss. I was talking about the one where, like, Kevin and Clay, were there too.
Okay, that makes way more sense. Yeah, actually that, as someone who lived with you, I can confirm that's basically, yeah, that's it.
Singing songs and gossiping?
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Those are of the best things on earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my name is Brittany Ray. I'm a 33-year-old artist and writer. I like badass moms and long naps. I'm on Twitter at Britannia, where I could be found attempting to be interesting and ranting about Star Trek this week. They canceled one of my favorite Star Trek shows, and I'm real mad about it.
If it was me, I'd be thinking about that submersible that blew up.
Oh, actually, yeah. I do be on Subtalk and Subtwitter.
Same.
Yeah. We watched Titanic last night.
You did?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Did I? I was like...
We are once again dating ourselves for the episodes for people, like, re-listening to this years later.
Okay, so years, if it's years down the road and you're listening to this, even weeks, the sub imploded. That's where we are in human history. Also, there's some funky going on with Russia. We don't know what yet. We'll find out.
Who knows? Yeah.
The thing that I like to do at sleepovers, so... We just had Chris and Casey here, two of our very, very dear friends. How old am I? Anyway, and the thing that I like to do at adult sleepovers is do drugs and play video games.
Oh my god.
They're legal, because we live in Canada, and I have, like, the babiest dose, because I'm a huge, like, lightweight, but man, we had fun doing that. Robin, we have a new game. It's called Chicken Horse.
I know, I was on FaceTime.
Oh, right. Duh, you were there. I might have been high at the time. Anyway, it's really fun, so that's what I do at sleepovers.
Nice.
Today we have words to say about episode 712 of Riverdale, After the Fall.
And our step-by-step notes for this season were written by the lovely Sheila Daly, who also goes by Blanche. So thank you, Blanche.
Thank you, darling.
The title is After the Fall. It's one of Arthur Miller's more personal plays. It's a thinly veiled personal critique centered on Miller's recent divorce from Marilyn Monroe. It takes place inside the mind of Quentin, who's a New York City Jewish intellectual who decides to re-examine his life in order to determine whether or not he should marry his most recent love, Holga. And it's interesting because next episode is called The Crucible, which is also one of Arthur Miller's plays. So it's... kind of weird that we had two Arthur Millers in a row there. They don't usually do that.
Yeah. Someone's getting a little sloppy in this final stretch. Oh, well, I mean, the writers are on strike.
Yeah, right. Thoughts from listeners. It's me. I'm a thought from a listener.
I knew it.
And I just wanted to say that we couldn't figure out who Reggie was playing. I tried to figure it out again because I was like, I know that they said Buck Rogers, but I wasn't sure if Archie wasn't just making a joke because he was similar to Buck Rogers, because I can't find a picture of Buck Rogers in the outfit that Reggie's wearing. And it feels so specific.
Okay.
So I noticed... in, like, I can't remember, I don't know if it was a behind the scenes or something that somebody posted on Instagram, but Reggie's belt says TB.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, who is Reggie supposed to be?
Well, I mean, did you look it up from other, like, critics and reviewers?
Yes, and the one on, I didn't look at a whole lot of them, but most of them said Buck Rogers. So, I don't know.
Oh, okay. So, guess we'll never know.
Guess we'll never know, because I'm like, TB, who is he? Mr. Tuberculosis?
Tuberculosis? Not the TB jokes.
Like, I don't know.
Oh, straight to hell.
Brittany, toot or boot this episode?
I'm actually going to give this a toot. It was...
enjoyable. Yeah. I didn't have issues with any of it, and it was even entertaining. Also, I got some good old sapphic content, so like, can I complain? No.
It was great. I'm also giving it a toot. I had a good time. I had fun, for sure.
Yeah.
We split this episode into Jughead, Veronica, and then all the basketball stuff, so we're gonna cover Jughead first.
Sounds Gucci.
Blanche also says at the beginning of her notes that she's really sorry that there aren't any wolf facts this episode.
Aw, you know what? And I really loved those wolf facts.
Across town, Keller is at Brad's apartment where Ethel just killed the milkman in self-defense. You may remember from last episode. Ethel tells Tom it's the same guy who killed her parents and explains what happened. Keller makes a face and Jughead jumps to her defense. Keller's uninterested though and says all his questions have been answered and that Ethel won't even need to make a statement. He calls it an open and shut case. And Jughead gets angry.
Bro, what?
Right. He asks who he thinks the milkman could even be, but Tom just says that he'll get to it later. Right now, he wants to send Ethel back to the sisters. Ethel and Jug do not like this idea, and Jughead suggests she comes with him, but Keller says she'll need to be in the care of an adult.
What do you mean this is an open and shut case?
Keller, you need to be fired. Keller, you're bad at your job.
Bro, do you not want to question why people keep trying to kill Ethel?
No? Okay.
Like... It absolutely blows my mind. I mean, obviously it's the idiot ball because all the adults in this episode are stupid except for Mary. But you don't even have the audacity to be a good cop if you're going to be a cop. Well, I guess that's not really an option.
Yeah. Blanche says that she cries every day because they could call Gladys in to be Ethel's adult.
Gladys would be the funniest influence on Ethel.
For Ethel, yeah.
Absolutely.
I liked that Jughead said, "My bud Ethel." It was like very clear friend zone for Ethel.
Oh my god, right? I genuinely laughed at that line.
My bud.
My bud Ethel. And Ethel's like,
"My buckaroo."
All right, message received.
Sure. Well, luckily it was in the narration, so she didn't have to have another blow to her conscience.
Exactly. Oh, poor Ethel.
I like how they're like, who is this man? And I'm like, Melvin, look at his name tag. His name's Melvin.
Please.
Start there, Keller.
We are in 50s Riverdale. Everyone has their names sewn onto their clothing.
Correct. And then I also just wanted to say that he's like, she needs to be in the care of an adult because she's a girl, Jughead, but you don't. Keep living alone in your train car.
Oh. Ugh. Well, you just made some very compelling points, my friend.
Late at night, Mary gets a call from Jughead. Betty and Alice are also there. The only thing I thought about for this one was that, like, when I saw Mary, I was like, oh my god, genius! Mary can represent Ethel! And then I was like, dang it! Mary's not a lawyer in this timeline!
Oh my god, duh! I totally forgot Mary was a lawyer!
Yeah. I was like, Mary could have totally helped, but...
Oh, and she would have been great at it.
Yeah.
I hate that, like, because we're back in time, the women don't get to, like, be in those powerful roles they were before. Ugh, I object.
I know, it's just like, Sierra, the mayor, please.
Tom, competent, please.
Nah.
Tom's not a woman, but I'm still complaining.
I'm still upset.
Betty, Jughead, and Ethel sit in the Andrews living room while Mary and Alice discuss what to do. They come back in, and Alice invites her to stay with the Coopers again. Ethel says no, because last time she stayed there, Alice sent her to the sisters. Alice says that was more Hal's idea, so it's fine. Is that true? I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so. I think she's making excuses.
Alice is like, me when I lie.
What?
Yeah, she's like, oops.
And like, I am once again mourning who Alice could have been.
Yeah.
Because
R.I.P.
She sucks this episode. There is no defending that other than to once again comment that Machen Amick, I am free on Thursday.
She's really pretty.
You're so pretty.
I noticed that Alice said, yeah, we'll get you set up in my sewing room, which is interesting because she stayed in Polly's room last time she stayed there, so...
Yeah, what's up with that?
Interesting. We do know, based on some behind-the-scenes stuff, that Tierra is coming in at some point in the back half of this season.
What?
So we will see Polly at some point. And I'm like, Charles, also, please!
I'm like, okay, but in this timeline, could you, because Polly's not there, and they haven't mentioned her, is it possible that they're going to say that Polly is FP's?
Ew. I wouldn't think so.
No.
No, I don't know. Tierra doesn't give FP.
Yeah, you're right.
Tierra gives Hal in the nicest possible way.
I'm trying so hard to find a way to still get our snake parents endgame. You understand.
Dude, if... Because by the time this episode comes out, they will have wrapped filming on Riverdale, period.
I want you to know and that happened yesterday.
Well, they said that, but now all of their Instagram stories are saying 3 more days, so I guess it got extended.
Oh, okay.
But by the time this comes out, it'll definitely be wrapped.
Okay.
So if Skeet did the Lord's work and came back at any time this season, well, damn, he fooled us. He got in under the radar because no one's seen him around Vancouver. I don't know. Not that I know of.
I mean, it's possible for him to go under the radar like that, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would like to see it.
Exactly.
I'm just going to be very surprised at this point because I'm just going to be so, I'm going to be so positively surprised because I, you know, at this point, my hopes are dwindling.
Oh, same.
Yeah.
But I'll clown until the very end, until those credits roll.
Oh, absolutely. Featherhead and Werther's welcome Ethel back to school. They say that the Milkman was a drifter who was poisoned by the ideas in Pep Comics. He must have read the issue, The Milkman Cometh, stole a Milkman outfit, and gone on his killing spree. Jughead clearly disagrees. He asks, why wouldn't a drifter move on? Werther's is offended and says they aren't in a position to theorize, and he hopes they now see the danger of comics.
Yes, that's the lesson that they've learned.
Dude, I loved this scene.
It's hilarious.
So funny.
I love the power struggles that Jughead has with authority mm-hmm. in these episodes yeah. because they're so low stakes are so funny.
Can I say something? I deeply regret the way that we talked about Ethel in previous seasons of this show.
Tell me more about this opinion.
We were just so mean about her, I feel like.
I also feel like that, but I also feel like every time we were trying to be charitable, they would then have her do something so insane that we couldn't defend it.
Yeah, I guess the thing is that, like, I'm actually really enjoying Ethel this season, and so that makes me feel bad, because I feel like every time Ethel showed up, I was like, get this annoying girl out of here! You know what I mean?
But I also feel like this season, just like with all of the other characters, there's more restraint with her character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, they don't have her doing those over-the-top insane decisions that had us going, what the, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, you know what? I grant that premise.
In hindsight, a postscript, in retrospect, to Ethel.
We got so many words.
An apology. Yeah, an apology to her. And Shannon Purser, you're doing a great job.
As per usual.
Yeah. So, they're literally like, hey, Ethel, welcome back. Good for you for committing murder. And Ethel's like, okay.
Thanks, I guess. Sure. I wish that I didn't have to commit murder if any of you were competent at your jobs, but that's fine.
Yeah, Werther says the the most insane thing. And then Jughead goes, yeah, that must be it. That makes total sense. Yep, sure.
Jughead's absolute disdain for all of these people. Oh, it's delicious.
I loved, this is going to be my favorite line award, spoilers, but like when they're like, don't drifters usually move on? And Jughead goes, drift?
Don't they
so good.
Drift?
Drift. It was so good, so good. And I love how they both pretend to agree. And I definitely noticed that something weird was going on with Featherhead in this scene. And I think we sort of see that with him talking to Clifford later in the other storyline.
I didn't really pick up on that.
Well, I think that he was just sort of like,
he's just kind of over it?
No, that's a good point. Because I think the thing that he seemed to be really like weird about was about Reggie in the other storyline, so I'm not sure, because he talks to Clifford about how like they were doing something sinister. I don't know, Fieldstone is behind this somehow. He's uncomfortable in this scene. Like, he's sitting there like he doesn't say much, and he's, yeah, something's up with Fieldstone.
Maybe it is a,
sorry, Featherhead.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe it is a yeah. consortium of,
but I also think something's up with Fieldstone.
All of them.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I wonder if it is like my original Black Hood theory, which is
like a group of them doing this.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Fieldstone welcomes Ethel back as she and Jughead sit in his office. She says she's just glad to be back here. He's looking forward to her and Jughead's next story collaboration. He asks what they want to write about, and Ethel says a sequel to The Milkman Cometh. Fieldstone says, anything but that. The Milkman is dead. Jughead says, with everything that's happened, why not capitalize on it? Fieldstone explains that everyone is thinking about Werther's article and how comics are evil, so they need to lay low.
Jughead, with that capitalist mindset, he said, mm-hmm. I will make capitalism work for me. And I say, you know what, boy? Good.
Well, he knows that Fieldstone has that sort of mindset, right? So he's like,
100%.
Let's do it. Yeah, I found that Fieldstone, I don't know, he's probably just an idiot, but I feel like sometimes I think that he's suspicious. Because he's like, no, don't talk about it. What? Hmm?
I don't get that vibe from him because I realized that he is basically just J. Jonah Jameson from the Marvel comics.
Okay.
So he's just kind of going to be like that brash, loud, I think that I know what's best for everyone type guy who's also exhausted.
Sure. Yeah, you're right. Fieldstone is just like a flat character who is there to be the comics guy and that's it.
100%.
Yeah, okay. They did a good job of sort of like doing the same story but masking it later. But I was like, make it an ice cream truck. It's still dairy.
Ice cream.
Ice cream man.
That's genius.
Right? Because I feel like ice cream trucks are creepy with the music. They you are. Know? You could make an ice cream truck scary.
I also really love that these, like, absolutely out-of-pocket children are like, I know that we just experienced a murder, and we'd like to write a fictional story about it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, here's the thing, though. That actually is kind of a healthy way to cope with stuff like that, to a degree.
Yeah.
So,
I really like it.
Later, Ethel is like, I want to tell my story. But then when we see the comic, I'm like, it's a mailman holding a decapitated head? Ethel, babe, is that your story?
I mean,
is that what happened?
I guess.
Okay. Yeah, that's the story she wanted to tell, so that's what's important.
Yeah.
I did think it was funny that Fieldstone was like, as of now, I'm lactose intolerant. I was like, very good.
That is a fantastic line. I will stand by that line until the day I die. That was my second choice for my favorite line award.
Perfect. Ethel and Jughead are working in his train car. Hot Dog is nowhere in sight. Ethel is still doing Milkman sketches. Jughead asks what she's doing since Fieldstone said they have to stop. Ethel says she can't. She explains that nobody but him believed her about what happened, and she even started doubting herself. She says she's tired of people telling her what she experienced, and she wants to put down her own narrative out there. Jughead says that makes sense and is very supportive. Now they just have to figure out a loophole.
Again,
great scene for Shannon.
Super great, and this is just, it's a really great way to deal with trauma. Like, what a very common...
Yeah.
form of therapy is art therapy, and I like this a lot. I really like when these two are together, which is not something I thought I would say. Yeah.
Crazy to say. Yeah. I think this is Ethel's best scene so far in the whole show.
The Ethel and Jughead dynamic reset and personality reset has been a godsend.
It's true. I think that their friendship at this point is really, really sweet, and I can see them ruining it, and I don't want them to.
Oh, yeah. I'm very much hoping that...
Like, their dynamic is really good right now.
I hope they add absolutely nothing to it that would...
Yeah. I did love the idea that Ethel was just like, I can't stop drawing milkmen. It's all I can do.
It's a compulsion.
I'm stuck.
I must draw the milkmen.
I'm in a rut of drawing milkmen.
It reminds me that, that really famous tweet that was like, me when I take too much Benadryl and see the Hat Man. And they're like, who's the Hat Man? Oh, this is not a safe space suddenly?
Yeah.
You're drawing the milkman? Oh, this is not a safe space suddenly?
Yeah, that's good. Jughead and Ethel bring their new story and drawings to Fieldstone. He loves it. He thinks it's a clever loophole. He says Werther's won't like it, though, but says a storm is coming their way no matter what. Jughead says they can either ignore that storm or face it head on. Ethel agrees. Fieldstone is excited and says, Bernie, call the printers!
Call the printers.
Bernie. Not for me. Return of the King. So I love the mailman idea. Yeah, call the printers, but not for me.
It's like she'll get there.
I love the mailman thing. That's great. And they were talking about this storm. And me and Meta, because you guys, if this is your first episode with us, my friend Meta comes over and we watch the show or the episode together, which is great. Because sometimes when you watch the episode by yourself, you're like, what am I doing?
That was me wandering around the house this morning, watching it like while I was just like making breakfast. And I was like, Are Betty and Veronica about to kiss? And I'm just trying to open a granola bar.
I know. Especially when, like, it's, like, the crazy, weird, bad episodes. I'm just like, what am I doing? I'm sitting here by myself doing
this. I can't watch this Marvel ripoff by myself.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were with Meta.
Yeah, so me and Meta were just like, what if he talks about a comet? We're just waiting for them to bring up stuff that happened in the original timeline. We were like, the storm, the wrath of a comet!
Wouldn't it be nice if we actually had a hint that the original timeline still existed?
Yeah!
Yeah?
Would be.
Yeah.
I don't know at this point.
I think I personally think that would be neat.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. It'd be my favorite.
I don't know. Just throwing that out there.
That's it! Short storyline. Alright, time for Betty and Veronica.
Hell
oh boy!
Yeah.
Betty walks downstairs the next morning after Ethel comes to their house and finds Alice making breakfast for Ethel. She asks Ethel if she wants to walk to school with her, but Alice says she's driving Ethel. So I guess she's like trying to make Betty jealous and is like, I didn't have a daughter and now I have one.
Bro, if there's one thing Alice is gonna do, it's find a replacement child.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No problem. I always love how Lily plays these moments where Alice is just like, well, here's what I'm doing, Betty. And Betty just goes,
okay.
Okay.
Whatever. No one gives derision like Lily Reinhart does.
Yeah, it's great. So Betty complains about Alice to Veronica at school. Betty says she's treating her like she's an unwelcome guest and that she's got half a mind to run away from home. Veronica says she'd invite her to stay at the Pembroke, but she's been living at the Babylonium since her parents kicked her out. She is uncomfortable when we are not about her. Betty asks if she's tried breaking back in. Totally a fair note from Blanche that Veronica's just like, oh, this is happening to you? Well, this is what's happening to me.
We are in the same boat, and the only way I know how to relate to you is to talk about me. And I'm like, ah, all right.
All right. Hey, I get that.
I get that, too.
I like that Betty called Alice phony baloney. I was like, get her.
Get her ass.
Drag her. That's a good one.
I like that Betty can see through Alice just so brutally. She's just like, I know what kind of fake nonsense you are pulling here, mother, and I want you to know it's not cute.
I am not falling for this. Alice is drinking and reading the newspaper on the couch when Betty comes downstairs with a suitcase. She says she's going to stay with Veronica, but Alice doesn't seem to care.
Bro.
She's like, okay.
Alice the control freak is okay with this?
Well, she's not her daughter anymore.
So annoying.
Yeah. Blanche wrote, Alice looks so pretty in this scene. To quote KJ Apa, I heart woman.
Oh my god, so true. And may I just say, so true, KJ.
Yeah, exactly.
I also heart woman.
B&V sneak into the Pembroke. Veronica asks Betty where she learned to pick a lock with a bobby pin, and she says the Tracy True Detective Handbook. Veronica says she loves those books. Betty asks how quiet they have to be, and Ronnie says they can be as loud as they want inside the apartment, but when they sneak in the back staircase, they'll need to be quiet. She adds she's told the boys the same thing. Betty thinks she means Archie and Reggie, but Veronica says she actually wants to have fun, so she invited Kevin and Clay.
She's so right for that.
Truly, they would be so annoying. Reggie and Archie would be so weird, and they would make the vibes all wrong.
They would be like, are any of us supposed to kiss?
They're having their own gay sleepover somewhere else.
Exactly. You understand.
Before Veronica talked about Smithers, I was just like, I love the idea that Smithers just looks the other way at this, you know?
Okay, but I feel like Smithers maybe does, because later when he invites Marion, he tries to warn Veronica that, like, he says, Miss Veronica, we're coming in.
Yeah, and he only comes in when he's with Mary, so he feels like he has to, right? Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Smithers, thank you for being a bro.
Smithers is the best. I did want to say it's weird that, like, it's been the Nancy Drew, like, detective handbook since the, like, since season one. And now it's Tracy suddenly, but we recently talked about the Hardy Boys, so we know that the Hardy Boys exist. And we know that Nancy Drew exists. I'm just like, it's really confusing. The consistency is really bad on this in particular, but it's Riverdale.
I think it's because Nancy Drew is a real show, she can't be something that exists in the Archie universe as a character in the 50s, like, even as a fictional character.
Yeah.
That's my suspicion, anyway.
Weird. I guess I don't know that much about copyright and stuff.
Oh, no, I think it's more to do with universe building than copyright.
Oh, sure. Blanche said, I love the callback to 103 here. When they broke into Grundy's car, Betty picked the lockbox with a bobby pin and says she learned that from the Nancy Drew Detective Handbook. Also love the season 2 callback to the back staircase Archie used to sneak in through.
Exactly.
Now that's fun.
I love the little Easter eggs.
Betty, Veronica, Kevin, and Clay are drinking rum, blowing bubbles, and dressed in swimwear? They all perform a cover of I'm Gonna Wash That Man Right Out of My Hair from the musical South Pacific.
Okay.
Listen, I'm thrilled to hear Lily sing. I'm honestly excited for the musical episode, even though it's all original music.
I'm terrified of that.
That makes me feel concerned.
That makes me feel scared inside.
But I'm looking forward to it because I love songs.
Yeah.
This is confusing for me. Because I'm like, who are we choreographing this for? Like, what are we doing here?
Listen.
And why are we in swimwear that matches?
Sorry, but as a theater kid, surely you must know that you have choreography ready for any moment, right?
I mean, not personally.
What?
Unless they've done the musical South Pacific before, you know?
Robin, you're blowing my mind right now. I thought that all theater kids had choreography ready to go. This show really made me think that.
Listen, did I have choreography ready to go with my sister for I Want It All from High School Musical 3? Yeah, I did. And one time, I super embarrassingly...
Wait, what if this is their equivalent of that?
I mean, could be, I guess, but when did they practice it? I lived with my sister.
So sorry, interrupted an embarrassing story.
No.
Tell me the story.
That's okay.
No, tell me the story right now.
So me and my sister, we made, like, choreography for I Want It All from High School Musical 3.
Of course.
We were very proud of it. And so one year we performed it in front of all of my friends at my birthday party. And that's a regret I have.
And your mom keeps video of...
Not that anything bad happened.
Everything. So...
Not sure if she has that or not, but you could ask her.
Denise, if you're listening to this, hit me up. I want the footage.
All right.
Also, sorry for talking about doing drugs.
I liked the line root for different teams, and I was like, more for play, more like play for different teams, Clay.
Because they're gay.
Yeah. They like sort of jump off of the couch, and I sort of saw that as potentially a Singing in the Rain reference, which we've talked about previously in the season already. Meta during the scene said, hey, who rented this bubble machine?
Oh my god, right? I was like, you guys have props for your sleepovers?
When were bubble machines invented? Googling.
Oh, I imagine they...
When were bubble machines invented?
They definitely were invented by then.
Oh, yep. We're good. 1918.
I was like, doesn't it seem like something that they would invent around those times to entertain themselves?
Yeah. Yeah. The musical is South Pacific by Rodgers and Hammerstein, and it came out in 1949, and it's crazy to think of how recent that was. They were like, you know, that episode from six... Or the, you know, that musical from 6 years ago? I love that musical.
And as a Rodgers and Hammerstein girly, may I just say, that's one of the few I haven't seen.
Mm. And then they also do the classic fall down and laugh, which was my favorite part.
Oh, I love a sleepover montage.
Yeah, it was great. After their musical number, everyone sits on the floor drinking. Betty tells Kevin that tonight has been more fun than when they were dating. Kevin agrees and asks how Halloween went with Archie and Reggie. Betty says she and Archie kissed, but then trails off. Clay says he thought she and Reggie might have had something, too. Veronica asks, whose dick is bigger?
I could not believe this scene happened.
I know.
I was in shock, and I was kind of... I hate to give Riverdale credit for shit, but, like, this is kind of a conversation that's awkward when you're queer. Because when you're queer and you're in, like, same-sex spaces, you do try very hard, like, because, like, obviously... You know, as a human being, you're not attracted to everyone around you. You don't want to sleep with everyone around you. And most times you're trying to not look at naked people because you don't want to see that without their consent. So I kind of thought that this was quite funny where like they were like, we try really hard not to look, but we do have the tea.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's interesting because like I feel like a lot of homophobes are like, well, I don't want gay men in my locker room.
And I'm like, the gay men don't want you in their locker room either.
Because you're scared that they're going to treat you the way that you treat women.
Robin. Right? You be saying something here, buddy.
I know.
That's straight tea. Sorry, gay tea.
So, of course. The boys would know whose dick is bigger because they all share a locker room. Gay Kevin says they both have a lot to be proud of. But they say that this is that Dilton actually has the most to be proud of and everyone laughs. I was thrilled. So excited.
First of all, not at all surprised. Second of all, may I just say, justice for Fangs, that was so rude.
Yeah.
I
love that Veronica was like, Julian, and it's like, oh, please.
That thing is, sorry, the bigger the asshole you are, the smaller it is.
But Dilton, canonically packing. Love it.
And Fangs, I'm so sorry for the slander. I guess you're not packing, and I just don't believe that.
Yeah.
I just don't.
I agree. Well, they were just like, you know, who has the big or has the most to be proud of, right? So they're not saying that Fangs isn't on the list. She's just probably under Archie and Reggie and Dilton.
Probably.
Yeah.
I'm just saying justice for my boy.
Yeah. So, you know, they're drinking this rum and they're talking about this rum, which of course reminds me of like the whole lodge rum thing that happened in previous seasons.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
I got like, or and even like, I think Veronica and Cheryl, like, got together and did some, like, rum stuff, too. Like,
Yeah, didn't they do maple rum?
Maple rum. Yeah. So, but they're talking about how sweet it is. So, I really felt like that was actually a callback to that.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I like that.
I was like, oh, Veronica kind of seems jealous with Betty talking about Archie like that. So, there was this, the, blurb came out recently for the musical episode, okay? And I had seen this blurb before, this episode, came out.
Okay.
So I was going in with this information.
Okay.
Okay, one moment, I'm grabbing the blurb. Here it is. So this is the one sentence that is relevant. Elsewhere, musical rehearsals prompt Archie to question what he wants in life, while Betty and Veronica confront what's going on between them. So I saw that and I went, what are they talking about? And then I walked into this episode and I was like, Veronica seems kind of jealous. Wait, is this what I think it is?
No.
And guys, it was.
What? Oh, that she was, oh, she's jealous of Archie.
Yeah. I was like, wait, what's happening? Is it, wait. And because I knew that something was, quote, going on between them. And I was like, ha, that sounds like they're dating, lol. And then I walked into this and I was like, wait, what, wait, for real?
Like, oh, are we gonna do it?
And they said, yeah.
And I'm kind of excited.
They said all the core four, except for Jughead and Archie.
Except for Jughead and Archie, which is yeah. all Ross wants in life.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually can't even say that. He probably changed his mind a million times since then.
Yeah. And Kevin's like, oh, I don't know. I'm not looking at people in there. You know, Kevin's only paying attention to Clay in there. Kevin, before he and Clay got together, remember when he walked into the locker room and was just like staring at Clay and was like, gotta go.
I'm like, bro, be a little more subtle.
Betty talks about how like she, I think they like talk about how Reggie and Archie have a lot to be proud of or whatever. And then Betty says, yeah, I felt as much from Archie. And I was like, oh yeah, in 703 when he popped a bee just for you, touching his thigh.
Oh man, that was so funny.
That was so funny. That was the best. All I could do was imagine KJ and Charles like standing in the doorway, sadly. Hearing them talk about this.
They're like, oh, you're talking about our dicks. Oh, no.
And then when they talked about Dilton, I was like, oh my God, Betty, you have a chance. Like, hello, get going.
She kind of does, though.
She does. He has a crush on her.
I'm like hoping...
Betty, get in there.
I'm hoping she doesn't explore that because I'd like to explore her sapphic side with Veronica.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But...
yeah.
I also kind of... I just want good things for Betty, you know?
And I want good things for Dilton.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would... oh, yeah, I just want nice things for him. The next day, Betty and Veronica are hungover at a pep rally. They eye Dilton and giggle, and he notices. I was so happy that he didn't take it a bad way. I was, like, really scared that they were gonna, like, giggle, and he was gonna be like, oh, my God, they're making fun of me over there, you know? But instead, he was just like, he looks back and is like, wow, like, Betty was looking at me.
He's like, oh, they're talking about me. Interesting. Wonder what they're gossiping about.
It was so cute.
And it's like, bro, it's your dick size.
Yeah.
Bro, they're talking about your dick.
Don't tell him that.
It's so fucking inappropriate, but like at this point is Riverdale. I don't know what else to do.
Yeah, it was so sweet though. I love it. I liked the guy who originally played Dilton. I have a real soft spot for this kid who's playing Dilton right now.
He plays him kind of sheepish. It's nice.
He's great. I think he's awesome.
Yeah.
Betty and Veronica are dress shopping at the shop where Mary works, which is just the recycled set of Pearls and Pogs.
It sure is.
Within clear earshot of Mary, Ronnie says the best cure for a hangover is spending money on new clothes. Mary asks if they're finding everything okay, and Ronnie asks if she could have their dresses sent to the Pembroke. Mary is confused and asks if Betty's staying there. Betty says yes and adds that Alice is totally fine with it.
Actually, I believe what she says is Copa said it.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if Mary knows that, like, Veronica's not supposed to be staying at the Pembroke.
I think so she's like, Mary's concerned because both of these girls seem like they are...
living alone.
And very without supervision, without any adult influences.
Well, that's the thing also, is that Keller is like, well, Ethel can't be living by herself. And yet Veronica?
Well, Veronica's a woman of color.
Oh, right. They're like, meh, good luck.
Not only is she a woman of color, I would also say... apart from the racist thing, which I think is always at play here,
mm-hmm.
Veronica is not someone that you could bend to the will because she's also a movie star.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And, like, when she lived at the Pembroke, she was under, like, Smithers' care, sort of, too. Mm-hmm. But now that she's been kicked out, I guess maybe Smithers is the only one who really knows about it other than Kevin and Clay. But, like, I feel like there would be more of a...
concentrated effort for people.
Objection to that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like yes on one hand, but on the other, because she's a woman of color, because she's, like, a movie star with money, I think that they know that she could buy her way out of absolutely anything they tried to do.
Yeah, basically, she can't be controlled, and I think that's a flex.
Yeah. And then, just, oh my God, they were roommates.
Oh my God, they were roommates.
Betty and Veronica are at the Pembroke again, tonight painting each other's nails. Ronnie happily remembers that Hermione used to paint her nails before bed. Betty says Alice stopped tucking her into bed after she got her first period, and she's sad because she ran away from home and she doesn't even seem to care.
Bro, I'm never gonna get my Alice redemption arc. I want you to know that I unintentionally pronounce redemption as redemption. Thanks a lot, Drag Race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, she's just so far beyond saving now. I'm so sad.
Yeah. It is sad. I loved Alice. Like, she's like one half of my big ship. So, I'm sad.
I loved Alice when they were writing Alice as like the rebel who ran away and like isn't trying to be a preppy like someone she's not.
Yeah.
Basically, when Alice was dating FP...
Got it. Season 2 was beautiful. Season 4 even.
It really was. It really was. We had it all, man.
Seasons 2 to 4, honestly, Slapped.
Peak Alice content.
Loved it. So good. Yeah. Betty says that Alice said that she doesn't need any more coddling now that she's, like, a woman. And, like, it makes me so sad that for her, giving your child love is considered coddling.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that says something for sure.
That's the mindset of an entire generation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's how you get where we are now.
Yeah. So Blanche said, before I continue her notes, since the rest of this scene is pretty significant, at first it seemed contradictory to me that Alice would do this because even just this season, she's always been so scared of Betty growing up. But the more thought I put into this, the more it makes sense. I think this actually solidifies the fact that she feels that way. The more Betty gets older, the more Alice feels like she has to push her away. I just wish we would dive more into why that is. I'm having trouble putting this whole thought process into words, but what do you guys think?
I think that makes sense because sort of the basis for Alice's character has always been the fear of losing both Betty and Polly. Yes,
100%.
So to make it a defensive instinct to push her away first so that she has more control mm-hmm. of the situation is very in line with both Betty and Alice. Because they're both of them are people who crave control because so much of their lives are outside of their own control.
Yeah.
So it is in line with Alice, as sad as it makes me. Like, it does make perfect sense. Alice has always been a character who has been a little bit heartless from time to time in the name of being someone who is very damaged emotionally inside.
Yeah, and, but I also think sometimes they're consistent and then other times they're just like, she just needs to say whatever we need her to say.
Yeah, she just needs to be a bitch because the story calls for her to be a bitch.
Like, and I know that this was sort of like her being manipulative based on what Werther's told her, but like even a couple episodes ago when she was just like, Betty, the day that you get married is going to be the best day of my whole life. I love you so much. You know, it's just like, yeah, they just, I don't know.
It's the CW parents curse.
Yeah.
The parents will always be stupid because the kids have to be smart and there's no nuance there and there never will be because there's no more CW shows.
Whoopsie. So Ronnie says they're both 16 and pretty much orphans. Betty says she's always felt so different from the rest of her family. She talks about Polly and says she left Riverdale as soon as she turned 18 and she's too busy to talk. Veronica tells her that her family lucked out getting her because she's wonderful and beautiful. And since they're sharing secrets, Veronica thinks she was an unplanned pregnancy and that her parents have always resented her for that.
I think that makes perfect sense.
This scene is awesome. It's really giving, like, real sleepover. Like, now, usually I want to say that one thing that is more realistic for me, and I know that they can't do it because, like, this is a TV show and we need to be able to see their faces and stuff, but, like, for me, when you get real deep like this, it's when the lights are already off. Yeah. The lights are already off. Sometimes you're not even facing each other when you're talking. Like, that would be more realistic for me, but I get why they couldn't do that.
Yeah, 100%.
I did want to note that Veronica is now Little Orphan Annie and not Daddy Warbucks anymore.
Oh, no!
They were talking about Polly, and I was like, can we talk about Charles, please? Yeah. I know Betty doesn't know about Charles, but I'm like, bring him in!
Robin says, I am uncomfortable when we are not about Charles.
Because I know 50s Charles. 50s Charles would be the Charles of my dreams.
Why? I still think he'd be a serial killer.
No! No, he's gonna be nice, Charles.
What if Charles is the real milkman?
No! Brittany! I'd be like, oh man. I'd be like, yay, Charles. But then I'd be like, wait, murder. I don't know. I don't know which one I'd prefer. I don't even know. But yeah, I thought that this scene is really awesome and like, yeah, some of Riverdale's best work. I liked this scene a lot.
I agree. I really liked it as well. I liked the emotional honesty. I liked that it wasn't entirely about boys and sex for once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We actually got to hear about these women's internal thoughts outside of their sex drives, which was very refreshing.
Yeah. Betty says they should make a pact to never grow up to be anything like their parents, which Blanche said was a callback to the 107 first kissed scene for Bughead, which I agree. She also adds that Clay and Kevin are such a happy and healthy couple, and she's happy for them. Veronica agrees and says she's also jealous of them because it must be easier to date someone who's the same gender as you. Betty shares a fun fact from her sex book. 81% of girls experiment with other girls. Ronnie says that sounds right. She's kissed a girl before. She doesn't share who it is, but Betty would know her? Betty says she hasn't, but she's fantasized about it with Veronica. Ronnie says she's glad she told her and asks if she wants to kiss. Betty nods, and they're about to when, of course, Marion Smithers barge in. When I tell you, I was like, nope, they're not gonna get there. It's not gonna happen.
Yep.
Smithers is coming in. In comes Smithers. And then it happened, and I was like, damn it! I didn't want to be right.
Okay, so I was just talking with my wife about this.
Yes.
Because I lost my mind during this scene, because I want you to know, and I don't even know if the writers know this. Like, they have to know a little bit, but this is, do you know that trend on TikTok where it's like, me watching insert event here, this is a canon event and cannot be changed?
Yes.
Me watching two women discuss how much easier it would be to date women than it would be to date men, yes, while on their way to lesbianism, this is a canon event and cannot be changed. This is exactly how it goes. You just didn't think, gosh, wouldn't it be so much easier to date someone who was just like me? Wouldn't it just be so much easier to date a woman? And you're like, yes. Do you want to explore what that means for you? Do you want to explore that journey for you?
So Veronica says, you know, I've kissed a girl before, which we knew, because earlier I think she had said, like, that she'd never done it with a boy before, right? And I was like, question mark?
Yeah.
But she says Betty would know her. And I was like, Betty would know her? You just got here. Like, am I forgetting something?
Yes.
And then I think that Veronica's talking about a celebrity.
She is talking about a celebrity because she's famous.
Yeah, I missed that.
Oh my God.
I was like, wait, what? Who? What? I missed, what? When?
Okay, that's really funny. Yes, she's definitely talking about a celebrity.
Yes. I'm amazed that Betty just, like, went out and said it. She was just like, yep, I fantasize about it and it's with you. I was like, that is bold.
Bro, these are canon sapphic events. You don't understand.
Bold.
This is such a canon sapphic event that I genuinely had my clown shoes on and I had to take them off because, like, I think I'm wrong. But
yeah,
conversations like this are so foundational to the sapphic queer experience that I was like, are they actually going to end up with Veronica being the end game? Because these are such life-changing conversations that happen between gay women.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the writers know that that's what they're doing. I think they just think that, oh yeah, this is how, you know, gay women talk, not understanding that, like, no, this is how they figure it out.
Yeah. It's really, oh man, every Taylor Swift song works for Riverdale in some way. I just want to say that.
Okay.
And this scene is so giving delicate. Is it cool that I said all that? Is it chill that you're in my head? Because I know that it's delicate. I'm just saying.
Where, okay, but like, where is the Robin presents the Veronica fan cam?
Dude. Okay, wait, hold on. I pulled up the lyrics.
Cause like, you can do a portion of it.
Thank you so much. I really feel like some of these are like very, this song is about a boy, but like, who cares, right? I'm just like, let's see. How about third floor on the west side, me and you, handsome, you're a mansion with the view. Do the girls back home touch you like I do?
Dude, this is a
long night with your hands up in my hair, echoes of your footsteps on the stairs. Stay here, honey, I don't want to share.
Okay, but like, why is this, wow.
Dude,
one of the writers listened to this on repeat while they wrote the Veronica storyline in this episode.
Okay,
like, you gotta wonder.
I know the delicate lyrics, but I wanted to look them up just to see if I could find something else, right? Okay, later?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the last scene of this storyline, Betty and Veronica, like, call each other because they're thinking about each other while they're trying to go to sleep, right?
Again, gay.
Sometimes I wonder when you sleep, are you ever dreaming of me? Sometimes when I look into your eyes, I pretend you're mine all the damn time.
Sorry, like,
who's making it?
Sorry, but like, what?
Hello? I literally...
This is a canon event and cannot be changed.
I do not have time, but I really feel like I could go through every Taylor Swift song and show you how it works for Riverdale. Like, I really do.
My thing is, I want to at least have like a
30-second Robin fan cam cut for that chunk of lyrics of Veronica, because what?
Dude, when school ends this week, I will have time.
I'm
gonna do
it. I would treasure that.
I promise.
Honestly, thank you. I would treasure that so much.
I'm gonna do it.
Yes.
Everybody, it's gonna take me a couple weeks, but get ready.
Yes. But like, do you see what I mean? How being like, oh, okay, like, I know we've been building the Barchi endgame. We've been told this from the beginning. And I understand this is probably a queer side quest because we never get the happily ever afters. I'm not even allowed to say that.
I love the idea of a queer side quest.
Dude, literally, when I tell you, that was the plot of Keeley's arc in the final season of Ted Lasso.
Mm.
She went on a queer side quest.
Blanche brings up Ted Lasso later in these nights.
Ah! I feel like Blanche and I have the same opinions about Ted Lasso.
I do love this, though, that it's like, maybe it is. Like, it's always been B&V. In the comics, it's always been B&V.
Bro, I'm clowning so hard. Like, I know I'm gonna get played, but am I clowning anyway? Yes.
Yeah.
Because I want this for Lily and Cammy.
Yeah.
I feel like they're enjoying it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. They're like, whoa, I don't have to kiss this smelly man.
I can kiss a pretty girl.
You always smell good.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm sure KJ smells fine.
Yeah, good point.
Smithers tells Mary that Cole, however, smells like cigarettes. Okay.
Ugh.
Charles, I'm sure, smells good, though. Okay, anyway. Smithers tells Mary that she was right about them staying here, and Mary asks B&V to tell her everything. So they do. And she calls what Alice said to Betty unspeakable, and she tells them that she's gonna fix everything. I was like, can we just all have a giant sleepover every night at Mary's house?
I was like, Mary, you can't fit all of them in your house, but I know you would try.
I know, yeah. And Mary is like, my school friends have aged poorly. They look great, but they're not very good parents, which is upsetting.
But they're absolute monsters.
Yeah. And my last note was just Mary was always the most badass MILF. It was always her.
100%. Mary, I love seeing Molly Ringwald is such a comfort. Mm-hmm. She has just such a comforting, like, lovely presence. And, like, whenever Mary is around, I just feel like things are going to be okay for all of those kids.
Yeah, yeah. So Mary yells at Alice that she shouldn't have disowned Betty and says she's worse than Penelope Blossom. She also called Hermione and got Veronica her apartment back. I thought Alice's reactions were very funny, but I'm still sad.
Machen absolutely serving that I'm in denial because I know that you're right, but I will never take an L in my life.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So Blanche wrote about this scene. Sigh. As funny as this scene was, and I did laugh out loud, I'm upsetty spaghetti. It is so clear to me that Alice is hurting, and I'm sad that this is the way that she and Betty make up. I at the very least wanted to find out what Hal stopped her from talking about before. Which is a good point, but unfortunately this show just doesn't care about Alice.
Yeah.
Like we do. Like, they don't care. That I really feel like that's not coming back up.
No.
Like, I feel like they just put that there, and then we read too much into it, and they're like, oh, that wasn't supposed to mean anything, you guys.
I mean, it's Riverdale, so that's entirely possible that that's exactly what happened. But this could also come back 2 episodes from now, and we'll be like, oh, weren't we dumb?
I sure hope so. Yeah. So Alice drops off laundry in Betty's room, much to her confusion. She asks if this means she's her mom again, and Alice says, of course, she and Ethel are both her daughters.
I just feel like Alice owes Betty so many apologies.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and she will never say them.
Like, that's the thing that kills me, is, like, there's no growth if you do not recognize what you did wrong, and you just try to revert back to normal. That's not growth. That's just a Band-Aid.
No. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that sucks, because I feel like Alice has sort of, like, at some point been a dynamic character, but, like, has mostly been flat, and that's not what you do with your main characters.
No.
That's not what you... Like, Alice has been a main character. She's been a top-billing actor. I'm like, so this is... What? What are you doing?
Okay.
Anyway.
So, remember this feeling and how you're like, wait, they're top-billed, but their storylines don't make sense. Their actions don't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, multiply that by 1,000. That's what happened on the 100.
Yeah.
And, like, that's how awful it felt.
Bro, that's such a good point.
Yeah.
Because no matter how this show ends, I'm gonna have a better feeling in my heart than I did about the 100.
100%. But, like, if you liked the dynamic complexity of the adult characters, you were like, oh, actually,
you were stupid for doing that, because what we're gonna do is regress all of those characters down to caricatures so that we can have the teens seem smart 100% of the time. And I'm like, but
why can't we have both
human relationships? There's a give and take to all of these dynamics.
Sigh. So, last scene, Betty lies awake at night and reaches for the phone, but it rings before she can dial it. It's Veronica. She was just about to call her. Ronnie says she just wanted to say goodnight and that she misses her. Betty says the same. They tell each other I love you for the first time. Veronica asks if she's going to the basketball game tomorrow, and they make plans to sit together, and Betty's going to explain the rules of the game to her.
This is a date.
Oh my god, it's happening! It's happening!
This is a date.
Nobody, stay calm!
Everybody stay calm!
Veronica bisexual confirmed.
Yes.
It happened!
And
it happened!
I'm like, oh, I know when they go back on this, my heart's gonna be broken.
No, Brittany, because just like we learned with Jughead, who's ace in this timeline, it goes both ways. Veronica's been bi this whole time.
No, but I mean, when Veronica doesn't end up being endgame, I'm gonna be heartbroken.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Veronica being bi, I think, is a canon event and cannot be changed.
Absolutely. And now we get to go back to 103 and watch Veronica look at Betty in the hot tub, and I'm like, see, I've been new.
Exactly.
I knew it in 103, babe.
Playing the long game.
Yeah.
And we are winning.
Once again, I just pictured Archie standing alone in a corner listening to this.
Honestly,
Yeah.
Before we go into the last storyline, I want to talk to you guys really quickly about Patreon. It's a service in which you can donate to some of your favorite creators. Our Patreon, patreon.com/theafficionados. We have a couple of tiers that you can join. It's a monthly donation of $1 or more. The $1 level is early access to every single podcast. The $2 level is our Discord server. $5 is 10% off at 3 different small businesses. And the $10 level is our Patreon-only podcast. We'd really appreciate your help over there. If you can't, check out some of those small businesses because you can support us while also getting something cool out of it. And then if not, just recommend us to a friend because that's free and it still helps.
One of those small businesses is mine and I make enamel pins and they're really cute.
And one of them is mine.
Yep. And Robin does embroidery and it's freaking cute too.
Yeah, thanks.
Archie blossoms and basketball. Ah, the ABB.
Yep. The ABB.
Our episode begins with Archie and Reggie waking up. Jughead narrates as they get out of their beds and do their usual morning routine. Jughead's voiceover tells us they usually start their mornings with a jog through town. Once Reggie gets to school, he starts focusing on basketball, and Archie starts focusing on his schoolwork.
I just think that Archie and Reggie are soulmates.
Like, this show is like they're brothers, and I'm like, that's absolutely fine. That is a valid interpretation. They are in fact meant for each other, though.
Yeah. I don't even care. I don't care if they're soulmates friend-wise or romantic-wise, but they're soulmates. They're supposed, like, they're finding each other in every, like, you know how we were talking about Jughead and Tabitha and how they're finding each other in every, like, universe?
Yeah.
That's what Archie and Reggie are doing.
But, like, Archie and Reggie have never really had a bond like this before.
I know. It's beautiful.
Like, I am so here for,
what's their ship name? Rarchie? Oh, I hope not.
Rarchie?
I mean,
I think it's, I'm pretty sure it's Rarchie.
All right. I don't like it, but it's not up to me.
I kind of love it.
It doesn't matter to me if it's romantic, just like, so we're clear again.
Yeah.
They're just so sweet together. Like, they're two dudes who deeply needed each other, and they came into each other's lives at the right time, and I'm like, really? In season 7, yeah. Riverdale?
Yeah. The thing that made me laugh the most about this scene is when they're doing, like, their little jog, I was just like, babe, that's not real. That's a facade. That's not a real town. That's not real at all.
Suri's like, stop telling everyone I'm not real.
I was like, that's a soundstage. Genuinely, like, those are the smallest buildings I've ever seen. Right by the Babylonium, we see this, like, dress shop called Perky and Peach, and I assume that's Mary's store. I don't think we knew what it was called until now, but yeah.
Oh, that would make sense. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay.
Still narrating, Jughetha. What? I miss Tabitha.
Jughetha on the brain.
Still narrating, Jughead reminds us that today is not a usual morning. It's the day after Halloween in June. And Julian, Reggie, and a few other bulldogs are in the hospital having just driven into Sweetwater River. You know what? At least they didn't go in a sub.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Reggie saved everyone by pulling them out of the water. Everyone is okay except for Julian, who is in a coma. We see Penelope and Cheryl by his bedside.
He looks fine. He's fine. He doesn't have any scrapes on it or anything. He's just pale.
He has no injuries?
No.
And I'm like, well, I mean, if he died, I'm not going to be sad.
Yeah. I did think it was funny that, you know, it's great that Reggie saved them, and we'll talk about that later, but I... It's funny that he left Julian for last. I get that.
As he should have.
Yeah, yeah.
Clifford is fuming in the hospital hallway, and Uncle Frank, barf emoji, is trying to calm him down and convince him not to kick Reggie off the team. Hate to give Uncle Frank points.
I'm so confused about Uncle Frank. When did he become an ally?
I feel like his personality does change episode to episode, depending on who is Riverdale, depending on what role they need him to fill. But right now, they need him to be an ally of Archie's against the bigger villains. So I guess Uncle Frank is Team Reggie now.
And I appreciate that. I'm just like, you were really bad like 4 episodes ago, though.
Yeah.
Like, it was really bad. He's like, well, I'm pretty sure Julian was driving. And I'm like, yeah, and it was Julian's car. You should know your son well enough to know that he doesn't let anybody else drive that thing.
It's such a beautiful display of, like, rich people just not being able to accept responsibility for anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it always has to be whoever is less fortunate, it's their fault for all of their problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something bad happens? Oh, that's a poor person's fault.
Yeah, yeah. And poor Reggie is just embarrassed at having to sit there in his Halloween costume still.
After having saved everyone and listened to this guy be the most racist piece of shit.
He really is a space hero.
He really is. And I gotta give Uncle Frank points for being like, actually, like, Reggie's a hero, and the fact that you can't see that is concerning. Mm-hmm. You should really worry about your own son instead of blaming someone for saving his life.
And Blanche said, so I've been watching a lot of Ted Lasso this week. I'm just now thinking, could Uncle Frank's disgusting stink bug mustache be a reference to Ted's? Because he's also a coach.
I mean, Oh, you know what? Maybe. It might be a coincidence,
but
maybe not.
Who knows?
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and say yes. Mm-hmm. Which, in that case, Ted's not racist, or not intentionally racist. Let's never say that a white person isn't racist. But, Frank is.
Yeah. And definitely homophobic.
Oh, 100%. And I just want to give a shout out to Blanche for the phrasing of this next paragraph. Mm-hmm. Archie and Reggie are lying in bed.
Dude, exactly.
Archie and Reggie are lying in bed. I was like,
I know. I was like, together? Yeah, I was like, makes sense.
One half of me is like, they're brothers. And the other half of me is like, they're lovers. They're love. And I'm never going to make up my mind about this.
Nope. And don't think too far into it.
It's Riverdale. Thinking too far into it is not allowed. Mm-mm. That will cause brain damage.
Julian knows that.
Julian's like, I thought too much about my own situation, and I drove myself into a river. Mm-hmm. So Archie and Reggie are lying in bed. Archie tells Reggie that he saved his teammates' lives and that he's a hero. Reggie disagrees. He says that he knew if he didn't save them all, that he'd be blamed for the whole thing and they'd throw him in jail or worse. Reggie, you're a good person because you recognized that and chose to act on it.
Yeah.
Being a good person means having the bad thoughts and making the right choice anyway.
This is such a good scene and like a really good moment for Archie. You know, Archie's always learning, you know, Archie's always saying things and thinking that he's saying the right thing and then learning that he just didn't think it through enough.
Yep.
And I really loved this moment because like Reggie's like, I'm not a hero. I was, you know, I was saving myself. I was being selfish. And it's like, can both of those things be true, though?
Yes, that's the beautiful thing. They can absolutely exist side by side.
Yeah, but they absolutely would have said that Reggie murdered those boys.
100% they would.
And I love the moment of Archie realizing what different situations they're in.
Yeah.
At any given time.
Yeah, it's like always learning in like the most interesting way about the experience of people who are not like him. Mm-hmm. And I just really love that Archie's journey this season is how to be a good ally.
Yeah, and he's always like, you know, he thinks so highly of Reggie and thinks that that Reggie's on par with him, if not better. But he keeps forgetting the fact that not everybody feels the same way as he does. And, you know, even a while ago when he was just like, that doesn't happen here in Riverdale. You know, he keeps forgetting that that does happen here in Riverdale.
And that is like a fault of a lot of well-intentioned allies is, you know, just because I think this way must mean that everyone thinks this way, and that's never true.
Yeah.
And I really like that journey for Archie. I think it's very, it's very nuanced in a way that I, again, just never expect from Riverdale.
I am really enjoying myself in all of this 50s stuff, but I do still want to make it so clear that by the end of this, I want to see the characters I know.
I want to see the characters I know, or I want to see these characters get their memories back but retain their 50s memories. Because I will be just so heartbroken if all of these relationships and character development are just wiped away.
Yeah, I agree. And we've seen behind the scenes pictures of like their graduating class. I guess I think it said 57. So we know that they've like sort of done a small time jump within before the end of the season, which is when the comet is supposed to come back. So
okay.
Yeah. And then I think at some point we saw a picture. It's hard because I think the actors are trying to confuse us intentionally, but sometimes they post pictures of themselves and they're like behind the scenes of like mostly 50s outfits, but like Vanessa posted a picture of her in her outfit from the Night of the Comet episode, right? Yeah. So everyone's like, we're going back. But I'm like, well, that could be from a year ago when she shot that, though. You know, like, I don't know. So, yeah, we do know that they are going to go to the graduation, which is when the comet comes back. So I would think that, like, I don't know, everything is pointing to them going back, at least even in the last episode. And that's fine, because I'm terrified that they're not going to do it at all. So even in the last episode is great.
Yeah, I'll take anything, but I do want to lodge a complaint with the Office of Robin that I wish that there was a more coherent through line, actually any through line, tying us back to the reality that we know, because, you know, as great as all of this content is, there's still a huge, gigantic plot line that is just kind of sitting there.
unacknowledged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'll file that complaint and I'll see what we can do.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That's all I wanted.
Yep. Of course.
In class, Miss Thornton reads a poem called Phantom to everyone that she says one of them wrote last week. Archie looks visibly surprised and uncomfortable. The poem is, "They tell me I'm solid. They pat me on the back. They see a son, student, team player. They see a boy like any other. But I look in the mirror and there's no one there. Just smoke and mirrors. And I do not know how to be solid." Thornton asks what their thoughts are and everyone agrees that it was great. Then she tells everyone. She tells everyone that Archie wrote it and that he should speak up more in class.
Dude!
And may I just say the absolute audacity of Kevin to assume that it was Clay.
That was so funny. Kevin literally thinks every good poem is written by Clay. Clay's like, thanks, but no.
You know what that is? Gay blinders.
Yeah. You know, we've seen Mrs. Thornton be, like, the good one, basically, which is nice, but, bro, like, even, I work in a middle school, and, like, when a teacher wants to take somebody's work and put it up on the board, or use it as an example, or, you know, anything like that, they always ask first. Always.
Oh, I never got permission before that happened to me when I was in school.
Well, they do now.
Oh my god.
Well, that sounds much better.
Yeah. And, yeah, just, like, you read it without his consent, and then you tell everyone that he, like, that's a no-no. That's not good, Mrs. Thornton.
Bro, literally, one of my core memories is of being in social studies class, and my teacher, whose name I actually genuinely remember, which is shocking for me, held my project up and said, "Why aren't you guys taking things as seriously as she is?" And it's, the only reason I took that project seriously is because I got to draw a picture.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. And I was like, oh my god. And like, everyone was like, okay. And I was like, I'm gonna go now. I need to go crawl in a hole.
And it's like, such a personal poem, too.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was so inappropriate for her to do.
But at the same time, I also like that it kind of, doing something that publicly kind of does push Archie to acknowledge the fact that he is talented.
Yeah. I guess, like, even, you know, looking at Archie's body language, if she had looked up at him at all before literally telling everyone that it was him, she would see how uncomfortable he was.
I think she knew and did it anyway.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, that sucks.
The poem, and also the poem, it's okay.
It's, I mean, you also have to think about it from the perspective of a teenager.
For a 16-year-old.
Had written it. And the introspection that it demonstrates is,
I have some notes.
Is quite lovely.
That's true. But I did think it was funny that she was like, you used like 3 similes and a metaphor. You're amazing.
And he's like, I don't know.
Stand up, babe.
Even how to spell those words. But that's great.
And Archie, Kevin's like, good job, Clay. And Archie's like, yeah, good job, Clay.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah, it was Clay. It wasn't me.
Yeah, Clay's amazing. Yeah.
It cracks me up that Kevin publicly
was like, good job, Clay.
Like, just
Clay's like, bro.
Embarrassed himself in the funniest way.
Truly.
I'm like, bro, do you not want people to think you're dating? Because they're going to think it.
Yeah, exactly. You're not being very slick here.
Uncle Frank reminds the team that there's a game this Friday against Stonewall. He also says he's naming Archie as the new team captain while Julian is in the hospital, and he makes everyone pray for Julian.
Nepotism.
Nepotism.
Nepotism. Like, Uncle Frank is like, well, Clifford wants you to do it. Clifford just wants any white boy to do it. He doesn't want Archie to do it.
Exactly.
In particular, you picked Archie.
Clifford doesn't give a shit as long as it's someone who's white, because white supremacists.
Archie was the water boy 3 seconds ago.
But, like, white supremacists always believe that white people are inherently more intelligent and more talented. And I'm like, oh, but that's just wrong on so many levels, and y'all are repeating those talking points in 2023.
Yeah.
You're still gonna be wrong.
And Blanche said, of course, Uncle Frank is a Christian. And that's fine. I think that the thing is that he's making everyone pray for Julian, which I don't care for.
Well, they think that's, like, their whole thing. They think that, like, everyone should just tolerate what they do, and so they should all think the exact same way. And I'm like,
oh, for sure. I'm just like, All right.
Yeah. That, your lack of respect for other cultures just checks so many boxes for me in terms of red flags.
Archie drops by Uncle Frank's undeserved office. So true. He says he's honored that he was named captain, but he really thinks it should be Reggie instead. Yeah. Again, so true. Uncle Frank says that it wasn't his call, and Clifford Blossom wanted Archie as captain because he's white.
Oh.
He doesn't say that, but you know. Archie says Clifford's always had it out for Reggie, but Uncle Frank says to leave it alone since he owns the Bulldogs. He then hands Archie a box with Fred's captain patch inside, saying he wanted him to wear it. So this is why Uncle Frank will only be able to develop so far, because he is always going to tolerate racism in order to keep peace.
Yep.
Which, absolutely. In terms of like insidious evil, is very high. And it's sort of something that, like, as a society, we are now reckoning with, which is that we've tolerated that intolerance for so, well, not we, but people tolerated that intolerance for so long that now these racists are emboldened, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I liked the idea that Archie gets his own HBIC shirt.
Right?
But it's this patch.
He's like, I've got a fun little pin.
Oh, look at me.
Fancy boy.
At Thornhill, Cheryl voices her disapproval to Clifford about the basketball season continuing while Julian is in the hospital. No. Clifford says that Julian made his bed and let him lie in it. Okay, so you understand that it was his fault.
That was, like, no, 100% though. He's like, yeah, Julian's an idiot. He calls him a dunce. He said he's always been a dunce.
And I'm like, yeah, okay, got it. So some of Julian's trauma,
okay,
is the classic rich boy can't get the approval of his father trope. Got it. Not a good excuse to be an absolute racist, though.
Ugh, it's bad.
Yeah. Clifford is also not budging about continuing the basketball season. Cheryl yells at him that he's just trying to relive his high school glory days, and he agrees. She says she refuses to continue cheerleading while Julian's so close to death. Clifford grabs and threatens her, saying she has to, or she'll suffer a fate worse than Julian's.
Okie dokie. Boy, oh boy.
Okie dokie.
Yikes. I thought she, when we saw the trailer last week, I assumed that she was yelling at Evelyn. This is scarier.
This is way scarier.
I did think it was funny that Cheryl was like, you're just trying to relive the glory days. And he was like, yes.
Yeah.
I peaked in high school.
He was straight up like, I absolutely am. And I'll be damned if you and your little friends want to stop me.
If only I could be a teenager once more. But that's impossible. Cheryl's like, yeah, I haven't done that.
Yeah. I have no experience with that, actually, so...
Yeah.
That's a crazy experience.
It's really sad because we've seen in earlier seasons, I want to say season one, of, like, Penelope sort of, like, grabbing Cheryl in a similar way. So, it, like, we've always known that the Blossoms were, like, not good and abusive, but...
Abusive, yeah.
It's always really sucky to see it.
It's hard to see it, especially because we... I mean, obviously, it's always hard to see someone being abused, but because we've mm-hmm. seen Cheryl go on such a huge journey this season, mm-hmm. and so, you know, we're so very much on her side all the time, but, like, she's also trying so hard to do the right thing and to call her parents out and to have loyalty to mm-hmm. her brother, who she also knows is kind of a dick. It's a weird place to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of conflicting feelings there.
Yeah.
But it's really nice to see her care about Julian, though, because they're like, they don't get along. So that was really sweet. Something that we've seen in some of the behind the scenes pictures is that we know that Jason shows up in the 50s.
I don't know what to do with any of that.
I don't know how that works. I don't know. No idea.
I'm going to be interested / terrified to see what happens.
Yeah.
Because, like, how is he still around?
He somehow exists. And, like, I know that it's the 50s because Julian is in those pictures, too.
So, like, is he her twin? Wait, is Julian her twin?
Yes. In this timeline, yes.
So were they triplets then?
I mean, that's what the original...
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
...dimension was.
All right. Ha, we'll see.
And then instead of, like, Julian being absorbed, Jason was absorbed, but now he's here?
Nah, I don't think Jason was absorbed. I think that Jason was given away or something.
Yeah, or something.
I think it's probably the Charles storyline.
I have a complaint later in my notes regarding the trailer, which is the fact that we know that Hiram shows up next episode because we've seen so many pictures of Mark on set and, you know, Majin has talked about it a lot and everything.
Bro, I forgot about Hiram.
But weirdly enough, Hiram's not in the trailer.
They're probably trying to save it.
As if they're just trying to, like, keep it a secret. But I'm like, but we all know that he's coming, though.
Yeah, but, like, only stands who really keep up with stuff would know that.
Like, I guess, but, like, oh, here, I had this written down. Hold on. Okay, so we see Julian. Yeah, this is later. But Cheryl's like, Julian's dying and everything. And I'm like, we see him in the pictures they post. We see this and this. Like, there are no actual stakes here.
He's not dying.
No, he's not. No. But, like, that's the thing is that, like, it really feels like, I mean, we've complained about this before. My favorite example is when I always call him Chad Dylan Cooper. Chad Michael Murray showed up and we were all like, that would have been insane if we hadn't all paid attention. But we all knew that Chad Michael Murray was coming.
Yeah. But so
they just, like, give us stuff. And then when we watch the show, there are no stakes because it's like, I know Julian's not dead.
Yeah, but that's only to casual viewers or to series viewers. To casual viewers, you don't know that any of this is coming. Like, cause
but shouldn't it be more fun for me though? I'm the hardcore one. Shouldn't you be making it more fun for me?
I'm your main audience. I'm who you want to enjoy the show, right?
I don't know, buddy.
I don't know. I'm pissed.
I'm so sorry.
They tell me too many things.
I'd rather know some things than no things.
I would rather know some things than no things, but I know too many. And then it's not fun.
I feel like that's a byproduct of Stan life.
Yeah.
You can't be surprised by something when you're so deep into that fandom.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the pep rally, Cheryl calls Archie, their new team captain, up to speak. Clifford reminds her to smile from the audience. Gross. Archie runs up and whispers to ask Cheryl if she's okay. She says she's just doing what's demanded of her. Archie doesn't know what to say. He just announces that he isn't great with words.
I love this.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, this microphone's fully picking up this conversation though, you guys.
Oh my god.
I really love that he checks in on her because he knows a lot about Cheryl and he cares about Cheryl. Yeah. Because he's learning sensitivity on, like, he's doing a speed run on taking care of minorities as an ally.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And they're like, hey, Archie, you're a poet now, right? Make a speech, babe. Go. And he's like, I don't know.
I have to sit and think about this for like multiple hours, guys.
He's like, I don't have metaphors on the top of my head.
Bless his heart. There's nothing up there.
No.
100% of the time. Just kidding. He's beautiful and smart. In the hallway after the event, Archie is brooding. Miss Thornton approaches him and consoles him. She says it's hard to come up with something to say out of nowhere, but it was nice. Archie disagrees. She tells him that his writing is wonderful and full of passion and heart. She said writing isn't exciting as being a basketball captain, and she hopes he'll put as much energy into it.
It's honestly, it's giving Troy and Ms. Darbus. It really is, in High School Musical 3 in particular.
Wait, it totally is, though.
It fully is. That's funny. Absolutely. Yeah. And, Mrs. Thornton kind of looks like my aunt.
Okay, and how do you feel about that?
I'm fine.
Oh, all
she
right.
seems nice.
Okay.
And yeah, every time that Archie is, like, approached in a dark hallway by a female teacher, I get a little bit scared, but we're good.
Oh, the boys, he's been through some things.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, what? Oh, no, we're good.
What's about to happen? Oh, wait, this is a nice person.
We're good. Yeah. Oh, never mind. We're fine.
Like the way we'll never recover from the trauma of Miss Grundy.
Never. No.
That woman was a pedophile, and this show did not take it.
That was like the first four episodes.
Seriously.
First four episodes, and we're still traumatized.
In case anyone's wondering why we have such fierce loyalty to Alice, it's because she was the first person to call Miss Grundy a fucking groomer.
Yeah.
And she was.
Mm hmm.
Archie and the Bulldogs rush out to see, Blanche has Gay Brett written here, Gay Brett and the Stonewall team stealing the statue of their Bulldog mascot, whose name is Peppy. Gay Brett says they'll have a chance to win him back on the court. He also says that Reggie never did well under pressure, and that the same will be true during their game. I have no evidence to believe that any of that is true, because I've seen Reggie under pressure. The last time he was under pressure, he saved four lives.
Yeah.
Archie starts to threaten him, but Reggie stops him. Brett sarcastically says he's sorry to hear about Julian and drives away. So,
Hi, Brett.
Go ahead.
Hi, Brett. Nice to see you. He's so funny.
This is the part of the podcast where Robin loses her mind because Brett's back.
He's just goofy. I think he's so funny. He, like, Sean Deppner shows up and he commits every single time, and I love that.
He knows exactly what show he's on, and he's having a good time doing it.
I feel like I loved season four so much that anybody from season four, I'm like, hi, guys.
Well, I recognize you.
I'm just like, I want Donna to be here so bad, but I know she's too busy being on Yellow Jackets.
That's where I know her from.
Yeah.
I knew she looked familiar.
Come back, Donna.
Oh, man, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. She's doing a good job on Yellow Jackets.
Mm-hmm. And also, I just realized that that dog is called Peppy, and it's called Pep Comics, and I only just put together that it's because Riverdale is the town with Pep.
Town with Pep. Oh.
Yeah, just put it together.
You know what? Not everyone can be smart 100% of the time.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I'm like, most of the time, but sometimes something slips through, you know?
Yeah. Listen.
Yeah, and then Archie says he's gonna give Brett a freaking knuckle sandwich.
Goofy lines in history. I love it.
And the sexual tension between Archie and Brett continues to be so palpable.
You just want them to kiss a lot, huh?
I just think it would be so funny.
I just want Archie to kiss a man just once.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin's kissed Archie, but I think that's it.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And Archie was like, haha, jokes. And I was like, no, Archie, like, please, take something seriously.
Archie, don't understand. It's not a joke to me. Archie, this is not a joke to me.
When they drove off, I was like, oh, that statue's just gonna fall right off the back there. But someone was holding it, so we're good.
Worried about the structural integrity of the statue.
And then, as they walk away, Fangs, like, takes his basketball and just slams his hand in the basketball. I'm like, I'm gonna hit this basketball and pretend it's your head, Brett.
I love Fangs. He is ready to throw down 100% of the time.
Uh-huh.
That's a loyal boy right there.
Mm-hmm. Archie and Reggie host a team meeting at the Andrews house. Reggie says he played with Stonewall, so he knows how to beat him. He matches the Bulldog players with who they should deal with on the Stonewall team.
This is really smart.
This is a great demonstration of how terrifyingly competent Reggie is and how he is only overlooked because of racism.
So one of the names on this list is Edward Sullivan.
Okay.
And that's just Ted Sullivan twice. Didn't Ted just die last episode?
Oh my god. I was thinking it was...
Didn't we just learn?
A reference to the Ed Sullivan show.
Maybe that. What's... I wonder if Ted's real name... It's probably Theodore. But either way, I was like, Edward Sullivan the second.
We're gonna sneak our writers' names in here so many times. And I'm like, good. Because you should get something. Because you're not getting money.
Brittany.
What?
I have to tell you something.
I'm terrified of what's about to happen.
Reggie said he'll be tossing up air balls all night.
Okay.
Okay? I finally read that in the...
Subtitles.
In the subtitles, and I was like, oh! Because I watched that over and over and over on the night it aired without subtitles, and I was like, tossing a pair of balls?
Oh my god.
What is he talking about? But tell me that tossing up air balls doesn't sound like tossing a pair of balls.
It kind of does.
Right? He's like, he's going to be tossing up air balls all night. And I was like, a pair of balls?
A pair of balls? In this economy?
What? Tossing them? Okay.
Oh my goodness.
That's concerning.
This has different implications. What kind of basketball are you guys playing?
Yeah, exactly. He also says that one of the players looks like Boris Karloff. Which means he looks like Frankenstein. But they always do be making the same reference just twice in a row and moving on. We just talked about Boris Karloff, I think, last episode.
Excuse me. Okay. Okay. Hang on. Let me play. I hate saying devil's advocate. But there are actually not a lot. Like, we're so used to having a massive range of things to make pop culture references from.
Okay.
They don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
Pop culture is kind of just getting started for them.
Sure, but as a writer for a TV show?
I mean, that's where my argument falls apart, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know? Like, it's like, eh, whatever. Anyway, and then also based on the goofy angle that we see of Brett at the game, he might be the Boris Karloff one.
Oh my god! It's totally Brett!
Yeah.
That's comedy.
Later, Reggie and Archie are doing dishes together because they're a couple.
Aww.
Or they're brothers.
Domestic.
One of those two. Reggie can tell that something is bothering Archie and asks what's up. This is such a healthy relationship.
It's beautiful.
Archie tells him he feels like an imposter because Reggie should be the new team captain because he's better at it and it's his dream. Reggie says he doesn't have dreams. He has a plan just to keep winning and eventually go pro. I love that. Reggie's like, at no point am I going to fail. I have to believe that I'm going to win.
Hell yeah.
That's how you get by in life. Archie says at least he knows how to keep his eyes on the prize. He says he only plays basketball to feel close to Fred, not because it's his passion. Reggie asks, well, what is his passion then? He says he wouldn't believe him, and they go back to washing dishes.
I think he would believe you. He's met you.
He's like, cars? Girls? Archie's like, no. Words. Music.
Music.
Love.
And I'm like, actually, that's very believable for you. I think that Reggie would buy that as your journey.
Yeah, it's true. They're so sweet. I loved this scene.
Cheryl sits at Julian's bedside and cries. Mads serves.
Always.
She cries like no one else.
Absolutely.
She says that she loves him and misses him. And even though they don't always get along and asks him to wake up, Julian wakes up and they joke together.
This is Julian's redemption arc. I don't want it, though, just so we're clear.
I'm like, is Julian going to be a good guy now? Like, it was a really cute moment, but I was like, is he now like, I saw the light at the end of the tunnel, my life flashed before my eyes, and I realized I'm a dickhole?
I mean, you would kind of hope, but I feel like it's just gonna make him worse.
Yeah, he's gonna be like, actually, what? No, Reggie didn't save me. I would have been fine.
I immediately was like, oh, I don't want a redemption arc, and then I'm like, wait, no, maybe I do.
Yeah, I think I do.
Like, just because I want that for Cheryl. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I also know that Nicholas Barrache, which I think is how you pronounce his name, is like so nice. I want to see nice Julian.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see how it's done. How about that?
I'm also like, can I get an example of this horsey laugh you're talking about?
Oh my god, right?
I don't remember Julian ever laughing. I don't know.
I think that this could be a good example of the toxicity of parenting where you raise your children to be in competition. Because eventually they will unite and take you down.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see. This could happen, but it could not.
Back at Thornhill, Cheryl eavesdrops on her dad's meeting with Featherhead. She overhears them saying that they're replacing Reggie and that they shouldn't worry about his family suing them because they can't afford to. They're also really racist about it. Katie Keene character and 501 of Riverdale guest star K.O. Kelly is going to be his replacement.
Okay, sure. Like, that. I'm sorry. I didn't watch Katie Keene. That man means nothing to me. He means nothing to me. We sort of thought that it would be Brett. They're gonna try and replace him just straight up with Brett.
That's funny.
And it doesn't make sense because this character is a person of color, so they wouldn't actually do that. But Meta thought that K.O. Kelly was Mad Dog.
Oh my god, that would have been amazing.
And I was like, oh my god. I was like, I would have died.
Yeah, I would have been living for that, I'm gonna be honest.
I love Reggie, so I'd be like, don't replace Reggie. But I'm like, can anybody else on this team, can we replace Julian with Mad Dog? I just want to see Mad Dog back. I love him so much.
Yeah, like straight up just have Julian quit basketball because of this traumatizing event and bring in Mad Dog. Yeah. And then I'll be happy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Cheryl goes to Archie about her dad's plans for firing Reggie.
Yes. Archie says that he heard the good word from the bird that Julian had woken up. And I was like, I didn't say anything. He can't put that on me.
Robin's like, excuse me.
I didn't say
I did not say a single, I did not consent to being a messenger.
Boring context. My friends call me Bird. And he said he heard the good word from the bird. I said, I didn't say nothing.
I didn't snitch.
I ain't no snitch.
Goofy. I really like that Cheryl immediately went to Archie.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I really like this. Yeah. In the parking lot, Archie relays this info to Reggie, who doesn't seem surprised. He says he still wants to lead the Bulldogs to the championship, and he wants to do it as captain. Archie says so does everyone else on the team, and they're going to make it happen.
I sort of almost thought that Clifford and Featherhead were going to, like, try and hurt Reggie instead of, like, just replace him. They'd be like, oh, but he's hurt. Like, he can't play anymore. We have to replace him, you know, so that they didn't look so bad.
I actually wouldn't be surprised if that's an escalation that ends up happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's the kind of nonsense that these type of men would pull.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Archie, Reggie, and the rest of the team arrive at Thornhill. Archie tells Clifford that they know about his plans and they refuse to let Reggie be replaced. He says he's giving away his captainship to him. Clifford protests, but Archie says if he won't make Reggie captain, then he's quitting. And everyone else is too. And it would look really bad for him if that happened during a winning season. Clifford says he does not take kindly to threats, but Archie says they're not threatening him. They're just laying out his options.
It's just extortion for good.
I love this because Clifford is ready to cut off his nose to spite his face.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's willing to gamble on losing the championship just so that he doesn't have to have a man of color on his team.
It's garbage.
Bro, what? Like, this is, when I say racist or stupid, I truly do mean it.
Yeah.
They've got no fucking brain.
And it's so weird because he's just like, well, not even Frank has the ability to change the captain. And I was like,
why?
What? He's the coach. Like, what are you even talking about?
I'm pretty sure he could just do it and you couldn't stop him. The game would still go on.
Yeah. And then they all say, we're all in this together. And it's adorable.
Those are some United boys. And I like that they have learned a lot. And they've seen that Reggie is exactly who they wanted him to be. And the fact that they didn't accept him is embarrassing for them.
Like, having a good coach, even if it's not you, like, random kids are like, well, I want to be the coach. Having a good coach makes everyone better.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just have to put your ego aside and understand that sometimes the players know the absolute best for their team.
Yeah.
And that you can have the best coach in the world who also knows the best. But if you're the owner, the manager, and you don't make good decisions, it's all going down in flames.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about Ted Lasso now. Anyway, so before the game, Uncle Frank asks Reggie if he'd like to say anything. He thanks the team and says no one has ever stuck up for him like that, and also says his parents are here to watch. Everyone heads out except Reggie and Archie, and they have a gay little manly sports handshake.
His parents are here. I love that so much. I'm so mad we didn't get to see them.
Same. Bro, we didn't get to see it.
I want to see them, like,
the whole game.
I know. I wanted to see them, like, cheering for him in the crowd and everything.
I was like, could y'all not afford to pay that many extras? And the answer is yes. No, they absolutely
yes,
couldn't.
Correct.
No. Yeah.
And it's for Pepe, which I loved. But Reggie's is number 17, and I was really hoping he was going to be number 14, but that's okay.
Why were you hoping he was 14?
That's Troy Bolton's number.
Got it.
That is so funny because 17 and 14 were my jersey numbers when I played soccer.
14?
Yeah, those were the only numbers that I played. It was either 17 or 14 and I refused every other number.
So cool to be 14.
Yeah. And you know what? That was before High School Musical.
Wow. a prophecy.
In the olden days.
Mm-hmm.
In slow motion, we see the Bulldogs and Stonies face off before the game starts. Wait, so were there people in the crowd in this?
Yeah.
So they paid them enough for this, but not the full game?
Correct.
All right. The tension between Brett and Reggie is palpable. Then we cut to a radio voiceover, because we don't get to watch it.
Nope.
That says the Bulldogs won the game, and that we see everyone is excited except for Clifford. We also see that Pepe was returned.
Yay.
I would like to, for once, see something happen in this show instead of being told about it, because y'all have a small budget.
The found family moment was beautiful, though. And, like, some of the best music of Riverdale? Like,
yeah, the music was great.
Why did I tear up? It was giving, like, those, the end of those sports movies that you see, you know? Like,
oh, absolutely.
It was good. I liked the music a lot.
It was very well done. I was just like, but I want to see a game.
Yeah.
Please, just one? Because you guys made me watch endless football games, and I hated that.
Yeah, right.
But I like basketball. Reggie and Archie talk in their room before bed. Again, just
their room.
The gay phrasing, Blanche. I love you so much. Reggie is happy his parents got to see him win. Archie says he earned it and that he wants to give him something. He takes out Fred's captain's patch. Reggie is hesitant, but he says it would mean a lot to him and Fred. He promises to honor him. He asks if Archie is staying on the team. When he says yes, Reggie asks, well, what about writing poems? Isn't that his passion? Archie says maybe he'll pursue that, but he's not sure the world is ready for Archie the poet. How did he find out about the poems?
Wasn't he in that class?
But later he asked Archie what his passion was, and Archie said, you wouldn't believe me if I told you.
Yeah, I wonder if Reggie was just like, okay, he doesn't want to talk about the poem thing.
I think it's probably, I think we're obviously I don't know. Meant to think, oh, Reggie figured it out. Aha, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But yeah. I'm like, oh, fine. I guess.
I also love that Reggie is just like, even though like some people, probably like Julian and stuff, would be like, poems? What are you, a girl? Or like whatever, right? And Reggie's just like, well, if you want to write poems, you should write poems if you like it.
Exactly. Because they are good boys who are good for each other.
Oh, it's so sweet that he gives him the patch. Because he sees him like a brother. He's like, this is from your dad too.
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. And I really like that Archie recognizes that legacy does not have to be through blood. It can be through reputation.
Mm-hmm. You know? The found family is so good here.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the boys horse around before bed as Jughead narrates that a storm is indeed coming. Girl, where? And that everyone would be smashed to pieces by it. This episode ends. I rolled my goddamn eyes.
Okay. They're like, well, you had something nice. Here's something foreboding that you need to think upon.
I was like, okay, well, it's an episode of Riverdale, so that's nothing new.
Yeah, so it's not going to be that big of a deal. I mean, a comet hit last time, so.
Also, you guys made it seem like that car accident was going to be a lot more dire than it was.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Segments. Our first segment is, what did Blanche think? I forgot to ask her if she had a voicemail. If she sent one, here it is. If she didn't, we just love you, Blanche, and you're wonderful.
It's true.
No voicemail from Blanche, but she told me to tell you that she wishes Gladys was here, and she wants everyone to know that she wishes that Mary Andrews would yell at Roberto to write better parents. Which character needs a hug the most? Ooh, I didn't think about it. I'm gonna give one to Ethel and Reggie.
Good. I was gonna suggest Reggie.
I feel like that's good. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
I was gonna suggest Reggie, so I'm glad that you took my suggestion that I told you telepathically.
Yeah, great. Nice.
And my segment is, which MILF is the most badass? Mary. And thank God I got to have a badass MILF. I've been content starved, guys.
Yeah. What is Sam shipping the most? Sam is shipping Veronica the most, you guys. Obviously.
That's literally based on you texting us that Veronica is real, her reading about it, and then me relaying the entirety of what happened in that scene. She was like, oh, that's gay.
It's real gay. Asexual Jughead? ? The answer is always yes. Gay as hell. Ethel's his bud.
they're friends and platonic friends, but with Tabitha, no, but also good, but also ace. Still ace.
Yeah.
Yep.
And now it's time for our best line award. My best line award goes to Jughead and Ethel for...
Do you really think that a drifter would do that?
Yes. Don't drifters usually move on?
Drift.
Drift? Do they not be drift? Do they not be drifting?
Do they not live up to the name?
Okay.
Interesting. It's almost like adults in this show are stupid. And mine goes to Archie for...
Shut your mouth before I give you a freaking knuckle sandwich.
Save it for the gang.
Knuckle sandwich.
You tell him.
Okay, wise guy.
And Blanche's favorite line award goes to Werther's and Jughead for...
And then he must have stolen a milkman's uniform and... begun killing to satisfy some insane bloodlust.
does make perfect sense.
Yeah, that's gotta be it, right?
That's the only solution. Good job.
This is why you're in charge. You're the smartest man in the world.
And now for the trailer, the blurb for this episode. Hiram Lodge arrives in Riverdale, Machen Amick directs.
Finally!
Panic ensues after Archie and the gang learn that Mrs. Thornton is accused of being a communist!
Well, that makes sense. She's been far too quote-unquote woke.
Cheryl's father, Clifford, forces her to out gay students at Riverdale High or risk losing power over the Vixens. Meanwhile, Hiram's surprise arrival to town is quickly met with suspicion by Veronica, and Jughead devises a plan to get around a boycott of comic books.
Okay, did not know that this was going to be an outing episode. Not going to have a good time.
Great. Well, it's the Crucible, so of course.
Yay.
So Clifford says to Cheryl, there have been allegations made against you, deviant sexual behavior. We see her walking in the halls arm in arm with Kevin. So they both said, beard?
Beard.
Beard.
Good.
Veronica says the whole town's terrified, gripped by paranoia. We see her getting driven to school and Archie watches that. Veronica says that to Betty and others in the student lounge. And then we see Betty bursting into what I think is the blue and gold. Ethel sits with Jughead and says, the world's gone cuckoo. We see people spreading around the comic book at Pops. We see Jughead at Pops in sunglasses and he says, so hot you're gonna burn your fingertips. We see Veronica kissing Archie at school. Okay. Hate the blowback from what we just got.
Yeah.
Featherhead says to Archie in his office, she was trying to indoctrinate you. I would think that was probably about Thornton.
Oh, yeah.
Then Archie says, huh? And then we get no Hiram in the trailer, which is weird because he's literally all over this blurb that tells us what happens in the episode.
All right. I'm going to grant you that that is a little odd.
But okay. Yeah. All right, then. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode.
Our music is Terminal by Good News Tunes.
And thank you to those who shared space with us while we recorded. Thanks to my dog.
Thank you to my wife, Sam, and our roommate, Emily, and our two horrible little stinky cats.
Yeah.
Thank you to Sheila Daly, aka Blanche, for writing our notes and providing some truly excellent commentary.
If you're a fan of The 100, you'd like to talk about that show too. We did seasons 4 to 7 as they were airing, and now we're going back to the good old days. We did season 3, we're in the middle of season 2, but it's been a while since we've been doing Riverdale stuff.
Riverdale do be eating up all our time. I say that as if I'm on The 100 pod. I'm like, friendship ended with The 100. Riverdale is my friend now.
Like, I'm so busy.
I don't have time for Jason Rothenberg. If you're a fan of Stranger Things, we'd like to talk about that show too. We are now on season 4, but we are taking a break for Riverdale. However, we've covered the first 4 seasons, so you should go listen to those.
The first 3, but yes.
Oh yeah, I guess technically 3.
Yeah. If you're a fan of Lost, we'd like to talk about that show too. We're in the middle of season 4 over there. We have guests and a spoiler section at the end if you want to watch along for the first time, and it would be my great honor. And that podcast is my baby, so I'd really appreciate you checking it out.
And it's a really good podcast.
Thanks.
We have amazing guests. And by we, I mean I used to be on it, but now I'm not because I'm old.
She's so busy. She only has time to talk about crazy stuff like Riverdale.
I truly only have the brain capacity to talk about deeply stupid things, and I think I'm right for that.
Yeah.
You can follow the Aficionados on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and our new TikTok.
Please and thank you. Our Patreon is patreon.com/theaficionados. If you like what we do here, please consider donating, because it's expensive with our money and expensive with our time, so we'd really appreciate that. If you can't help us out on Patreon, check out our small businesses in the description, or recommend us to a friend, because that's free.
Free and lovely.
Thank you.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Britannia, which is BRITTANIA with an underscore at the end.
And you can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey. That's RobynEJFFrey pretty much everywhere. Next episode is episode 713. It's called The Crucible, and it is the episode that Machen directed. The Crucible is a 1953 play by American playwright Arthur Miller. It is a dramatized and partially fictionalized story of the Salem witch trials that took place in the Massachusetts Bay Colony during 1692 to 93. Miller wrote the play as an allegory for McCarthyism when the United States government persecuted people accused of being communists. Relevant. Miller was questioned by the House of Representatives Committee on Un-American Activities in 1956 and convicted.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's that's the year after this episode will be taking place, which is interesting.
Bro, we have turned the clock straight back, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Okay, love you, bye!
Okay, love you, bye!